You're tuned in to the Vintage House Show, home to the original stories of the history of house music as told by the legends, pioneers, and icons. Hosted by Kevin Mega McFall, Lori Branch, and Lauren Lowry.
All right, here we are. Welcome to the Vintage House Show, everybody, brought to you by the Modern Dance Music Research and Archiving Foundation. We're so excited. I'm so excited because I get to be here with my bestie friend from so many years ago, Miss Robin Kent. Thank you for joining us, Robin, all the way from Miami.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's 72 degrees here.
rub it in because it's winter in Chicago.
I heard you were like down to 20, right?
Ooh, it's nasty, nasty cold out. I'm looking out the window right now and it's snow and ice. And well, hey, listen, you know, one thing I like about the cold weather in Chicago, the criminals just tend to like go inside.
Right. It's too cold to rob somebody.
I know. So knock on wood, they stay inside for a while. But anyway, Robin, I'm just so excited to talk to you. This is a take two. We actually tried to do this once before, but we had some issues in the studio. So thank you for taking time to come back to us, to talk to us more about the show. I'm going to use my mic just to get a little bit closer so that we have some good audio for us. But let's start from the beginning. So look, Robin and I have known each other. I think we met when we were teenagers, clearly.
17, 18.
Yeah, we were babies back on the south side of Chicago. I think we were talking about some of our mutual friends like Aisha Mays and Rodney Patterson and all those good folks. But I just remember meeting this really smart, classy, funny, wickedly intelligent person. I was just like, who is Robin Kent? And like, that's Herb Kent's daughter. I was like, you mean punk out like on the radio, Herb Kent? Yeah. Like, oh my God.
I love it.
So I was thrilled. And
well, Matt, it was so effortless. I mean, I feel like I've known you.
We just
had an instant click because I met you through Aisha.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And she was a sort of a little bit of an iconic figure in that era back then. Everybody kind of knew Aisha and the groups that she was in, and the Coteries and Just Us and all. Were you in any of those clubs?
No, because I didn't go to high school with you guys. I was in Dallas, and I would see you guys every summer and Christmas break. I would come home and, you know, hang out and be at your doorstep every day.
That's right. I remember that. So you grew up in Chicago, but you went away to like school where you were living there. Talk about that, because I think that's an unusual experience for most Chicagoans.
Okay, so what people don't really know, I went to boarding school in Illinois, and the school was called Mother of Sorrows, and they're still open today, but they just do like day schooling, and it was a boarding school, but they had day students come, but on the weekends, I would come home. You know, my parents would either pick me up or have like, remember Jet Livery cab?
Yes, of course.
They would either send the Jet Livery to come pick me up out in Blue Island and then bring me home. And any given weekend, I come home, I would see, you know, Smokey Robinson and my dad playing pool, you know, or you know, stuff like that. It was just like nothing to me, you know. But then fast forward, my parents separated after we moved out to Olympia Fields. Mm-hmm. And then when they parted ways, my mom had taken me to Dallas. So I went to high school there. I went to Lake Highlands High School, and then I graduated, went to Spelman for a hot minute. Mm-hmm. And then, what did I do after that? Then I came back to Chicago, went to New York, came back to Chicago, got pregnant. You know Morgan Proctor?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. His mom was Barbara Proctor, a very an amazing pioneer woman in the advertising industry. She was like one of the first Black women. So just ironically that he and I have a son, which is the most amazing accomplishment, I have to say. I know that's so cliche. Everyone says that about their kid, but Evan has been such a rock.
Yes.
For me, in the sense of, because Lori, you know, I'm such a wild, you know, and my son is he's a Virgo. So he's very, real cool.
I met your son. I remember the contrast. I was like, he's good for you.
Yes. And he's locked me off of many ledges, and even going through my probate. You know, that was a journey. Fast forward. He was just always in my ear saying, Mommy, make sure you stay in chair therapy. And at first I'm like, what does that mean? Chair therapy, what I'm doing now, sitting down, staying in your lane and staying focused and don't be all distracted.
Wow.
you know, social media where you're being bitter and lashing out in that way. So he's really been a really good part of my life.
He sounds like a really smart guy. I know he's not a kid anymore. He was a kid the last time I saw him.
Yeah, he's 32 now.
He oh my God.
I know, right?
He's a flying by.
He's a big man.
Oh, wow. All right. So you sped through a lot. We're going to back up a little bit to just talk about what it was like. You know, you were in a, your dad was a pioneer, legendary. We're going to talk all about Herb Kent, but what it was like for little Robin coming home and seeing Smokey Robinson growing up in that environment?
You know, it was like, I know nothing else to compare, to be honest. You know, people say, what's it like, you know, having Herb with your dad? It's like, that's all I know. And I knew that he was special early because just the attention that people would give me and the way they would be all like, oh, you know, what do you, you know, just like that kind of thing. So for me, and it kept me in a space of knowing that I was a little different, but it kept me in a space of being very grateful. I knew the difference. So my dad would always say that, you know, you can never, you know, go back and change time, you know, love yourself and just be in the moment and just be transparent. And people will always see and appreciate that, you know, so.
Yeah.
Kind of,
what other celebrities did you see in there? I mean, like Smokey's a big one.
Chaka Khan.
Did you meet Chaka Khan?
She was my teacher. I was going to Ancona, and her stepmother, Connie, was my teacher. And then I guess she heard that, you know, Herb Kent's daughter, because dad would come by and pick me up, or my mom or my housekeeper or whatever. And I think it was her and my mother got to talking. And then my mother was always like the go-to. Mm-hmm. Oh, Herb, you gotta, you know, listen to XYZ. So yeah, dad kind of helped push her through, you know, and got her where she was.
Wow.
Our lives, you know, gosh, Arnold Schwarzenegger, but I met him when I was older. But,
okay.
You know, further on, but yeah, just growing up, that was my kind of household normal, you know?
That is really awesome to hear. These are like iconic figures in Chicago. I'm guessing that your dad probably had the opportunity to interview and meet all of them. I think about the Emotions and Earth, Wind and Fire, and, you know, so many others who came out of Chicago's South Side and West Side.
You know, dad went to Hyde Park High School.
Okay.
He went to Hyde Park High School, and Minnie Rippleton, she went there.
Minnie Rippleton. Did she?
Yeah, she went there, and Donald Stewart, he's the president of Spelman College, and a school of other people, you know, came out of Hyde Park High School. So yeah, and dad just, when I say music and radio is his life, he would do it for free. You know, I mean, it was so much about the people and the art. He was never a big money guy. You know, dad never bought like a bunch of fancy cars and big house. He was very modest and just stayed very, you know, true to his passion and his art.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about, and Lauren and I are working on a project where we're kind of dissecting the 80s and the 90s and sort of this early era of sort of the house music culture and then house music genre and sort of how it all came to be and all of our stories and how we intersect with that. When you think about, you know, house music, what does that term mean for you?
Oh my God, Punk Out Hour, Frankie Knuckles, God, Better Days, The Warehouse. It just puts me in a state of, I remember when I saw this documentary that you and Aisha did, and one of the people in the interview was saying how their first time going to the, I think it was the Warehouse, and how just walking up, you can hear that, and the closer more, it just took over your body. I mean, it was just like a different world, you know. Things were so much. It wasn't so much chaos. It wasn't, you know, just different. Like, you know, how our parents can say things are different in their time, but it just puts me in a space of kind of just warm and just in a good, like a hug. If that makes, you know?
Like I love the way you describe that. Because it was warm. You know, it's funny that I've never heard it described that way before, but it there was kind of a, yes.
Just more genuine and just very like family. You know, now you can be with friends and you're like looking at them side eye. You know what I'm saying? But back then it was like everyone was just cool. It was no animosity. It was no jealousy. Everyone was just all, you know, on the same page. And it was just great. So I was blessed to be, oh my God, I'm getting emotional.
Oh, go ahead, girl.
You know, just blessed to have had been in you all's circle. Yeah, because you guys are like my friend. You all love me for me.
Yes.
That's what you cannot, you can't trade that out. And I know now today, seeing it, looking back, I'm very grateful. So thank you, Lori.
Thank you, Robin. I felt equally blessed.
Kenny Wallace, everyone.
You know, Kenny Wallace. Thank you for bringing his name up.
Yes.
John Jordan.
John Jordan. Oh my God. And Wes, remember Wes, little Wes?
Yes, of course.
And Caesar, they did my baby Caesar. Shower.
Yeah. Caesar Dodd. Yeah. So these are people who are no longer with us. And it is hard. It is emotional and hard to think about. We're coming up on Black HIV/AIDS Awareness Day. And we lost so many of our friends, you know, the Kevins, both the Kevin Rose and Kevin. Remember those guys, Kevin Pegues? And
yes, I do. And I was so sick when I heard that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've lost a lot of people. It's funny because I think you bring up a really good point that often gets skipped over when we talk about house music history, is that it was coinciding with the AIDS epidemic.
Yes.
You know, that was happening at the same time. We're talking about, you know, the warehouse and power plant and music box and Chippy and Steve Hurley and, you know, all of those iconic names, Vince Lawrence. I could go on and on. Right. There was this other side of things where people were getting really sick and these young men who were our friends, you know, not surviving past their 20s.
Yeah. They got caught up in that, you know, because it was such free love and it was not so. It was just, like I say, different times and just the way that people were moving. You know, you can zig and zag, not the same way that you could then than we do now. So it was just a real scary time, you know. But I do remember, like, as far as, like, the music, when my dad was doing his show on, I want to say, WXFM, and he had the Punk Out Hour. And again, not a lot of people know that when I was in school in Dallas and I would come home for the summer, and while I was in school, I made friends with this young woman. She was a European descent, and she was like a punk rocker, you know.
Okay.
And then me, Miss Preppy, we just looked like oil and water, but we just, you know. And I would go to her house after school and had a beautiful home, and she would play this song by Devo called Whip It.
Oh, yes, of course.
Remember that?
You know, yes, you I, must I, whip it.
Hey, your mama's back.
So that's right.
I bought the record home and I'm like, Dad, I go, you got to hear this. I go, I love this song. So he played it in the studio. He was like, Robin, he goes, I don't know. I said, Dad, please, you know. He's like, okay. So he played it. Mm-hmm. Girl, the phone lines lit up. Mm-hmm. And at the time, my dad's engineer was like, he never seen anything like it. So that kind of spun and created Dad to kind of donate or designate an hour of, like, kind of like Punk Out, you know. Then he introduced B-52s and then Rock Lobster, and then from that, you know. So
that's funny that we talk about house music and we don't ever, I didn't say we don't ever, but we don't talk enough about the influence of punk music and other kinds of you know, types of musical genres that we were into at the time.
Right.
But we did call ourselves punks. I don't know that we were hardcore like your friend. We were like preppy punks.
Exactly. We were like approachable, non-threatening punkers. You know what I'm saying? We had a little fashion, you know, Lori wearing her, I mean, Aisha with her black, shiny police shoes. No one was good. You know, she's wearing big overalls. Remember that?
I do.
So, I mean, just, and she kind of put me up on, you know, little fashions here and there, because she was like, girl, you can't be going out with us wearing no damn penny loafers and a plaid skirt.
Oh, I used to love that look. You look like you were straight out of Catholic school going to the clubs. I was like,
I know, partying and drinking and smoking and, like, looking like I'm going to rough, you know, it was weird, but hey.
And you already looked like a baby. You know, you still look super young, but back then Robin was like, how old is she? Like, is she 15? You know, like.
Because no one was really dressing like that. It was weird, but it was fun though. You know, we all looked very, we had our own little eclectic little clique, and you know, we worked together well.
I think we did. And I love that you brought into it fashion, because fashion is another thing that was, when we think about house music culture, and I'm talking about like pre when we were calling it house music, but we were just saying we were punking out, or we jacking our bodies, or whatever the term was that we use. If you can look at those flyers, None of them say house music, not till like mid 80s, late 80s, you know. But it was the same people that moved from this era to that era. And that's why I think we sort of claim it all as house, right?
Right.
It was the same people.
Umbrella.
I like that. Yeah, it was an umbrella. And all those folks were under it sort of through those different genres. But fashion was a big part of it. You know, Aisha was, I think, all of our influencers. She was like modeling a bit and, you know, sort of getting into that and teaching us all how to sort of present better. Caesar was the same way. What a beautiful Caesar Dodd, beautiful guy. We miss him. What else do you remember about fashion? Because I know that you curate your style so well. Even today, when I see you, I'm just like, she is so always well put together. I feel like I'm like a grunge monster. I'm like, okay, I got to clean up my act when I see Robin.
But Lori, you have such a beautiful spirit, and your smile and just your finesse and persona outshines a pair of shiny shoes or a dress. You know what I'm saying? But for me, and I want to be honest with you, growing up, okay, you know, I'm the only child. I'm the sole heir, right? But
right.
I was always a skinny little frumpy, you know, like I always had like little short haircut. And my mom, my grandmother, she was like, listen, with Robin being so skinny and little afro, people may think she's a boy. My name is Robin, you know, so.
Okay, that's true.
You know, so if you notice or remember, I always wore bangles on this right hand. So, you know, people would know that, okay, she's got to be a little girl. She's jingling, you know, her little bangles, whatever. But for me, growing up, I was kind of like a little ugly duckling.
So no.
I had to dress a little more, be more attention to detail, put it that way, to accommodate for not looking so, you know.
I don't buy that at all.
But I grew into it. I mean, I was always a little insecure in that way. That's why I always had like beautiful girlfriends, you, Aisha.
You're sweet.
So, you know what I mean? Just, I don't know, just kind of to elevate me because I just felt like a little, you know.
That is, so that's hard. That's interesting to hear, especially, you know, growing up, you know, with Herb Kent as your dad, being surrounded by celebrities. Yeah, talk more about that. Why would you feel insecure in that setting?
I mean, because, you know, for me, it was just a time of when everyone just seemed to be in a different, like I wasn't being looked at as everyone else was, if that makes sense, you know, like I would see how, you know, men or women would look at other. I'm like, well, they don't look at me like I'm cute or pretty, you know, they, oh, I like your shoe or your dress or what you're such a, I don't know, just a little weird, little mind, whatever. But, you know, I pushed through it and just became very comfortable with myself, you know, and now, you know, when you get older, of course, you become a little more knowledgeable about life and how things work. And it's not about really how a person looks, how they make you feel, and about the experience that we can make together. So it's just changing with time. But I'm just really, I'm very blessed in a lot of ways to have been exposed to a lot of different things and have met a lot of interesting people, you know, coming up. And, you know, it's been touch and go. You know, my life has not been all milk and honey.
Yes, no one is.
You know, right? And I'm proudly here today to tell you that I am a product of a recovering addict, okay? I've got 30 years clean and sober.
Oh, congratulations.
Same thing with my father. He's a recovering addict, you know? So if I can be inspirational or be some type of a, you know, something to gravitate to, if you're struggling with something, you know, it is an illness. And also, you know, you have a choice, you know, and for me, it was me reaching out to my family saying, hey, you know, I need some help. You know, things are, this wheel is getting kind of rickety. You know, I need some help. And
yes,
once I reached out and then I never looked back. So,
amen. Amen to that. I think that you hit on something that we also don't talk enough about. And unless there are brave people like yourself who will talk about their experiences and what it means to sort of move through a what you might consider a dark period. But, you know, I also think in the darkness, things grow. You know, it's a time for pain, but it's also a time where people, when they experience that and they move through it, they're stronger because of it.
Exactly.
And it's so important for people in our community to understand they're not alone. I had a friend who I was just talking to, and they were telling me their story. And I said, you know what, when you talk about your story, I wish you would I wish you would talk more about like that period in your life where you were struggling with substances and you lost your way, because when you came out of it, you were so much better.
Exactly. And, you know, and then too, drugs and that party scene, you know, and me being my father's daughter, just to go back a little, it was never like a monetary thing. You know, it wasn't like I'm stealing from my family or I lost my job. It just was so much of like in that era, it was what people were doing. It was
right.
Like Studio 54 kind of, but in our own little community.
Right.
And then to a lot of the guys, like, you know, the people who were serving the lovely pharmaceuticals, they were like, oh, that's Herb's daughter. She's cool. Just give it to her. You know, so that
oh,
made
wow.
So just because it's free didn't make it right. It was too much, you know, and yeah. That could be also a downfall, too. So I knew at the end of the day, you know, 6 months into getting into that whole little craziness, I caught myself and I knew I wasn't feeling myself. I wasn't looking myself, you know, and that's when I knew I need to get some kind of help and just reel it in a little bit, you know, and so thankful and so grateful to have gone through that when I did versus like now. It may have been not the same outcome, you know.
Right.
And I've got friends, unfortunately, who didn't make it out of that, you know, who are still, you know, caught up in the drinking and doing whatever, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're just kind of hanging on, you know, so I pray for them. I don't judge. I'm here. I'm a soundboard.
Yeah.
Whenever you're ready, you know, I'll go with you to NA, to AA meetings. Yeah, I don't mind.
Yeah. That's really great. I know that right now in Chicago, and I guess this is happening everywhere, we have a fentanyl problem.
Ooh, yes. Yes.
It's
yes.
really, really bad. We
had two of my friends lost two children from that. So it's very like, yeah, it's gut wrenching. You know, you have to be careful and just it's a whole different ball game, you know.
Yeah, it is. It's not like you can just sort of hang out with people you don't know and do cocaine. And I mean, it's crazy. And several people that I know who've lost folks who were close to them, you know, children, siblings, parents, sometimes people in the whole family. So it's a cautionary tale, I think, for people who are listening to this and thinking about it and maybe are casual drug users. It's nothing casual about it these days. If you don't understand where it's coming from, and even then, you know, there's things that you can buy. You can buy test strips, you know, to test. I mean, I'm just talking harm reduction right now because I know that people like to get high. You know, people like to get drunk. It's part of our culture, you know.
And today is so different. It's a lot more bells and whistles, you know, from when we were doing it. I think they have a bigger variety to choose from. And it's so just unstructured and it's just a mess. You know, you never know. People are doing things to be so spiteful and so mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you got to be careful.
Yeah, I've heard that. I have actually heard that this might be some retaliation. Across the border for legalizing marijuana. That's a whole nother show. That's a whole nother show. But let's talk about your dad. I think, you know, he was clearly, you know, one of Chicago's earliest African-American DJs. You know, he worked at a lot of stations, iHeart Media 103 FM, and as you mentioned, the earlier stations, a Hall of Fame. He was known as the Cool Gent. Maybe we can start there. Where does that name come from?
Oh my God. So Herb Kent, the Cool Gent, Daddy, he told me he got that name from, well, you know, my father went to Northwestern.
Yes.
He was very smart, but he didn't end up finishing because he got a job, I think, in Gary doing at a station there. But a group of his friends, they would always tease my dad. They would go, Herb, they say, you're so cool. You know, you're so cool. No, you're so cool, but yet, you know, you're still a gentleman. Like he was always a gentleman to the ladies. So they just kind of cut it in half and just put Cool Gent. Mm-hmm. So it's like Herb Kent, the Cool Gent. He's so cool, he's froze in his clothes.
Kind of love that.
Isn't that cool? And then Herbie Baby, that came like later on. You know,
Herbie Baby. I remember hearing that on the radio. Herbie Baby.
That lady was like an older, she had like a little kid.
Yes.
And he would play that in his opening, you know, monologue.
He was great.
Mm-hmm.
I know. So he went to, you mentioned that he went to Hyde Park High School. That's a high school in Chicago South Side. A lot of musicians, a lot of, you know, famous people, DJs have come out of that high school. It's just It's got quite a legacy of its own. But I read somewhere that he had a teacher that once told him that he would never be a radio broadcaster because he was a Negro.
Exactly. And that just crushed him. It crushed him to like, are you serious? But it crushed him in a sense of it made him push even harder, you know? He got into like, they had like a radio or some type of a club that he got into. And that kind of elevated him to move forward. And then he was able to meet Hugh Down.
Yes.
Later on in life. And that was a really changing pinnacle in his life because Hugh had helped Dad get this position at the radio station. My father had, you know, he was calling and they were talking to him over the phone. My father has always had a very, you know, grand speaking voice. And
pronunciation.
So they just assumed that he was a white guy, you know? So he goes to the station and they're like, you know, they're just being kind of dismissive, like, oh, okay, yeah, delivery's in the back. And he's like, no, I'm Herb Kent, I'm here. They were like, well, hold on one sec. It was like one of those kind of things, you know, like, guess who's coming to dinner? So they had to wait and, you know, they called HR and they were like, well, saying, no, we're not really interested or blah, blah, blah. So my father went and spoke to Hugh. Hugh made a phone call. And Dad went back, and that's how my dad got that job at that particular radio station. I don't remember the call letters, but that was one of Dad's first, you know, professional gigs. And from there, never looked back.
That's wonderful. And he worked it with WVON, also known as the Voice of the Negro, for some time.
Until 77, until all the jocks got fired, okay, in 77, 78, because it was a big scandal called the Big Payola.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Talk more about that.
Oh my God. So when, for me growing up, okay, so my father would work. Okay. The station was located on Kedzie Avenue and, you know, during the daytime VON, the offices, people were coming in, you had your salespeople and, you know, different radio execs coming in. So at 5 o'clock, the office portion was closed, but Daddy worked in the evening from like eight to midnight. Or 7 to 11, something like that. So by the time Dad would get there, it was like dead, you know? So when Parliament was in town or, you know, the Ohio players, they would all come to the radio station, just like they do now to interview them.
Of course.
So Dad was always entertaining them in that lovely party format. You know what I'm talking about.
Of course.
I mean, it goes with the territory. You know what I'm saying? Love, sex, rock and roll, baby. No. So, and I remember several times, you know, busting in the studio, seeing things that my eyeballs should not have seen, but I still have my faculties to this day. But it was just a lot of fun. It was never a dull moment, you know, and just running around the station and getting into things and just seeing all the different, you know, celebrities that would come in to be interviewed. Now, mind you, Dad would sometimes bring them home. So my mom now has to get up, you know, entertain and, you know, 3-4 in the morning. It was crazy. And I grew up in 9801 South Harvard.
9801 before. Yeah. And then, okay. That's out there.
Yeah. South Side. It's like the house is beautiful now. Someone, they bought it and redid it. It looked totally different. But yeah, we were there up until like right around the time Dad got fired. You know, things were changing. The neighborhood was getting a little rough.
Yeah.
We had 2 break-in attempts at our house, you know, so Dad had to have police sitting at our, because people knew where we lived, you know what I'm saying? So things would be really weird. And
you're vulnerable. You were vulnerable in that space.
Yeah.
So let's move forward a little bit. Dad stayed on the radio probably longer than, I think he was the longest serving DJ in Chicago, maybe beyond that.
Listen, Daddy is in the Guinness Book of World Records. Mm-hmm. He is the oldest only living disc jockey in the world. Okay. And it's so ironic. He was 88 years old. Dad passed away in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
October 22nd, 2016.
Yes.
And he worked that morning. Okay. Dad is the only disc jockey in the world also who worked, you know, 2 days a week, excuse me, but Sunday working an 8-hour gig. Most jocks only work 4 hours.
That's right.
So on Sundays, that was a long day for him. Mm-hmm. So he dedicated that 1 hour to, he created the Battle of the Best, you know.
And I then remember that.
You know, different guests come in and just keep it entertaining. Daddy was a great storyteller. Mm-hmm. He can play a song and tell a story or scenario about that person or just anything. You know, he was like a walking encyclopedia of knowledge of music and radio. He built his first radio. He was like 16 years old.
Wow.
video. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was really smart, very smart man.
And yeah. Oh, yeah, I know you do. What if you can think of some music that was dearer to him that you would hear around the house or that you would hear him play on the radio? Like what? Right. I know he had millions of songs in his head, but what stands out for you is like, this is essential Herb Kent.
Oh my God. Like he would play, and we would have like classical music, you know, he would do like a lot of old, I can't remember old, some, I mean, they were like old songs that he mm-hmm. would like, he was just such a big, he was like a big kid. Mm-hmm. I can't say that he liked any, he didn't like rap. I know that, you know, again, he was like that. He was like, Robin, turn that shit off. And once I put on Tupac and it was like some gunshots in the background that were coming up in the song and he didn't know it. And I turned the volume up and he was like, damn it, Robin. And it scared him so bad.
Oh, poor baby.
But it was hilarious. But no, but Dan would always mostly just play like, you know, stuff from like in the 40s and the 50s. Like, oh my God, I can't think of the names now that escape mm-hmm. me. But he just had a big variety. He liked it all.
He liked the oldies, but he liked the new stuff. I mean, you brought him into the pre-house punk music era, and he was doing mm-hmm. Punk Out Hour. Wasn't right. It was called the, what was it called?
The Punk Out Hour.
Yes.
Punk Out Hour. And it was, I want to say on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, because he worked, it was a WX, was it WX, WBEZ or WXM? No, not XFM. It was, oh my.
Was that, that was not on WVON?
No. WVON, yeah. No. This was like in the 80s. That was in high school. Cause this,
okay.
I graduated in 83. So we're talking like, because after all the disc jockeys got let go from that scandal, you know, he wasn't working. So then he got a job at that station. I want to say WBEZ.
He was at WBEE, 4L, WMAQ, one of those. But anyway, it was an important era, I think, because we were hearing ourselves. Mm-hmm. We were, you know, he would do advertisements. I think I mentioned to you, like when I heard Herb Kent say, DJ Lori Branch is doing a party with Vertigo. I was like, how does, of course, our guy, you know, we were paying for the advertising, I think, or maybe not. Anyway, he did us a solid, but he would promote like local DJs and he promoted mixes. And, you know, it was a really cool era that you were responsible for. I know you were responsible for bringing that, you know, into fruition. So Robin Kent is an architect of house music. I'm saying this to our executive producer, Lauren. So, you know, it's so good that we're having this conversation. But we're all sad that you lost your dad, that we lost Herb Kent. Mm-hmm. And happy that he had a full life. I know there were some challenges after his passing, and I don't know if you want to get into that, but I think it would be helpful for viewers and listeners to understand sort of what's come of that and what's next.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So for me, it's been a true journey, you know, losing my father and then shortly having to go into fight mode for what was rightfully mine.
Right.
This particular woman, you know, you can read about it in the paper, but I'm not here to speak negatively about that person. But the insidious move that she did in regards to my father was a very... it was very negative. You know, my father was sick. Not a lot of people knew that my dad had dementia. Mm. You know, my father taught at Chicago State for 18 years. And even, you know, the students and the faculties, they were noticing that he was being a little forgetful and was, you know, beginning to repeat things over and over. Now, the difference when you're working on the radio, you're on the mic, you're behind. No one can really see you.
That's so true.
They were kind of, you know, navigating dad a little more. He was becoming more like, he was still comfortable in what he did because he'd done it for so long, but I could hear him on the show and he would say things like, okay, so now what are we doing again? Or, okay, so now we're gonna, you can hear him.
Yeah.
I could hear it, you know? And just the way he was beginning to interact with people on the radio was becoming a little sharp and like, oh, dad, that's a little edgy. You know, it wasn't the same because when you become ill like that, you begin to come, you're like, you know, hey, you know what? Perfect example, the woman on the Golden Girls and how their mother would just say what was ever on her mind.
You're just totally unfiltered.
Exactly. That's what he was becoming. And some people, like, they know dad had a great sense of humor, but it was becoming like, ooh, a little strange. So. Yeah. That was happening. And then the fact that this, you know, the woman, my dad's girlfriend, had did the classic move and, you know, was separating me from my father. Mm-hmm. She moved him all the way out to the suburbs, you know, with him being sick. Why would you move someone out of this territory and give them more confusion? So there's a lot of issues on that. But fast forward, you know, as of September 28th of 2022, I won my probate case and I was granted my father's estate. So now I'm the executor of the Herb.
That's great.
Yeah, my lawyer, who is amazing, Christopher Berghoff. If you need any help in probate, please, please call him. And that's another thing I want to let people know, the importance of to put your affairs in order. It doesn't matter if you're rich, whatever, if you have three nickels to rub together.
Yes. Put your affairs in order.
Yeah. When people die, you're already in a cloud from losing someone. Then you have to now fight over property, a car, a shoe. Don't do that, you know? So if we can put down 10 grand on a Range Rover, okay, or a mink coat, let's take 30 minutes and put a will together, which costs less than $500 or less.
Absolutely. No, I really appreciate you saying that to people. Everyone needs to do that. It's really important.
It is. And a perfect example, Laura, you and I are sisters, right? And our mom died. You want to sell the house. I don't want to sell it. Now we're bickering and our mom is not, you know, so don't do that. Yeah. Just make it easy transition as possible for yourself.
That's right. So what's next in preserving the legacy for your dad?
Oh my God. So I'm glad you asked. So my attorney, who's amazing, Christopher Berghoff, he has found an amazing company out of LA called CMG Worldwide. And what they do is out of Beverly Hills, and they represent dead celebrities. So I'm going out in the morning, as a matter of fact. I'll be there for like 5 days. The young man, his name is Wyatt, and he's going to be over my father's, you know, estate. Or just his likeness, shall I say. Mm-hmm. So, with that, we're going to be doing a relaunching of my dad's book, which you see here, The Nine Lives of Herb Kinsey-Coolidge. We're going to be doing podcasts down the line. We're going to be doing merchandising. I want to do a yearly memorial concert to raise money because I want to give back. I have to do a scholarship. My father was very, very big on education.
Great.
So, some other things I want to tell you off camera, but just moving forward.
Okay.
Keeping it moving. We're going to do a documentary. We're going to do the Herb Kent story because I want people to know the real, real Herb Kent.
Yes.
Insight, you know, because they've done Whitney Houston's story 5 times. You've done Elvis 10 times. Okay, we get it. We know who he is, you know, but not a lot of people in the world have ever heard of Herb Kent, number one. Number two, the fact that he is the oldest living disc jockey in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Yes.
This is his story, the peaks and valleys, how he lost everything and came back. Just all of that. It can be encouraging. And also, Lori, I want to also try to see if I can get Daddy in textbooks, you know, for education.
That would be great.
Switzerland, from Japan, who are in school for communication or broadcasting. Hey, who was this guy, Herb Kent? Yeah. So it's a slew of things. And I'm so excited.
Well, you know what? I can't tell you. I just get chills thinking about the potential there because the world needs to know Herb Kent.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that you are taking that legacy, your family story, and sharing it with folks because we're going to be better because of it. And we are better because he was here. And we're better because you're telling his story.
Yeah. That's what I'm here for. I mean, from here until, you know, my feet go underground. That's going to be my mission and my journey. That's my job.
Well, we're here with you. We are standing with you, whatever you need. And I know you got a ton of friends and fans out there. So if you're watching, send your love and support and all those good things to Robin Kent as she goes on this journey to really tell the story about her famous dad. And I hope we hear more of your story too, Robin, because
story called Being Herb Kent's Daughter.
Mm-hmm. All right. See, there it is. Because that's important. Like, people don't talk about kids as celebrities, like the real story. And what you've shared today, I know it's just the tip of the iceberg. So we look forward to hearing more.
It gets greater later.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Yeah. All right. Well, Robin, I'm going to let you go. I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. I'm so happy that we're still in contact with each other. I'm going to be crashing your pad in Miami eventually because it's too damn cold in Chicago.
Listen, all you need is bring a toothbrush and a bottle of tequila, and you're welcome.
I can do that.
All right, my
All right,
love.
sweetie. Thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to the Vintage House Show podcast. Please subscribe and share and check us out live, WNUR 89.3 FM, Wednesdays at 10 o'clock.